Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best, where the paranormal is normal, where that which you thought you knew, you didn't. And where the future can be known if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and listening, and we're going to have a great show. We've got Larry, and we've got Stan on board. Hi, Stan. How's it going?
Oh, good. How's it going with you guys?
Pretty good. Larry, how are you doing on your mountaintop?
Oh, doing okay. So glad Stan's on tonight. This is great.
Yeah, this is going to be a good show. Where do we start? I mean, it just seems like this Middle East is cooking along, and with John Bolton on there, and I'm either, you know, I mean, I just think we're heading in. What's your take, Stan? You can elaborate on it, and Larry, too.
Well, there are so many aspects to that thing in the Middle East. I mean, we've got the White House, you know, the Trump and son-in-law Kushner's involvement with the Saudis. We've got the moving of two U.S. bases, you know, one in Qatar over into Saudi Arabia. We've got the Saudis allowing the Indian Air to fly over Saudi Arabia to get to Israel for the first time in a long time. You know, we've got the Russians saying if we do any, like, bombing, et cetera, in, you know, Damascus or Syria there, that it will be a declaration of war against Russia. You got Russia backing North Korea, China and Russia, but China mainly backing North Korea. And then, of course, Trump hits them today with, you know, the $65 billion tax tariff thing, and they say that's a declaration of war, in essence, trade war against China by the United States. So where do you want to go? I mean, that's, you know, that's just
where do we start? Well, we could break it down into your concept of Salman and what this really means. He seems to be rising rapidly there. Let's just hit on that particular subject.
All right. Well,
watching him.
I have, and it's been since about 2016, the early part of the year, when I had finished, you know, discovering the location of Garden of Eden. I was working on Atlantis, and a natural follow-on, trying to figure it out and relate it to Genesis 6. You know, about the follow-ons. And in the process, you know, I was investigating Saudi Arabia because that's where I placed most of Atlantis, the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, and the leadership. And I stumbled across, which, you know, all of us do occasionally, in Revelation 13:18, I stumbled across 13:18 about the identity of the Antichrist and the name of the guy. And like everyone else, I had looked at various names in various languages. Did they add up to 666, like it said? And, you know, gotten answers in several languages and several time periods. I'm thinking, I'll let him be revealed when he's revealed, because this isn't going to help. But then, like, you know, all of us have done this. You read a scripture several times in your life, and then you get back to it later in your life. You look at that scripture again after you've had, I don't know, a bad day at the office or something else in a movie you saw, and you think, wait a minute, this scripture might be read a different way and mean a different thing. Same words, but mean something different. And Revelation 13:18 was my scripture that clued me into the identity of the Antichrist being a Solomon, like King Solomon, but a name Solomon. And it took a lot of research after that and a lot of inspiration by the good Lord, I'm sure, what I researched. But I did find that in the Middle East, there were three guys, basically, that rose up, in my opinion, maybe four, to possibly be a Solomon-type Antichrist of this age. Now, those are, you know, from Turkey to Syria to, even to Iran and then to Saudi Arabia. I looked at names of Solomon. Well, King Solomon at the time, S-A-L-M-A-N, that's the Arabic version of our word for Solomon. Okay, well, all right, he was getting old and about to, you know, expire. He still hasn't yet, and he hadn't turned over the reins to his son, the prince. But there is a prince Mohammed bin Salman, so I put him in one bucket. And then I looked at Bashar Assad. He had a number of markers that make him possibly, you know, the Assyrian, but his name wasn't really Solomon or any derivative of that. And then I looked at Erdogan of Turkey. And, okay, well, Erdogan's name is definitely not anywhere close to Solomon, yet he, like many of the Turkish, do revere, you know, former, what do you call him, pashas in English, sultan, the sultan Soleimani, and the grand sultan of Turkey. Well, okay, so even he sent troops, Erdogan, over into Syria to guard the tomb of what they think was Pasha Soleimani, you know, his you know, hero worship guy. And then you look at Iran, another major player in this. Okay, we've got not the president of Iran, but you know, kind of the head of the military there, a special branch of the military that's called the Jerusalem Force to go and wipe out Jerusalem. And his name is Qasem Soleimani, again another Solomon. So all, you know, these four main guys I looked at, I thought, wow, wow. So I started building a chart, which is on, if you go to my show images page, to the Hagman show images page, I have it down to image 13 and click on that. It'll take you over to the six people that I'd put onto my watch list for, you know, leading contenders for the Antichrist of this age, including the Pope and Osama, sorry, not Osama, but Obama. So anyway, and there were boxes underneath each one of them that had to be attributed to the Antichrist to help us identify him this age. Okay, now I'm going through this a long reason, long way, to say that, yes, young Mohammed bin Salman, the son of King Salman, he is now the heir apparent to the throne, and virtually all management of Saudi Arabia has been turned over to him by his father, even though his father still retains the title of king. All right. There are historic evidences that the Salman family coming from, it's Mohammed bin Salman Al Saud, from the Saud family, that they were actually started by an Israeli merchant years ago over near Basra in Iraq, you know, like generations ago, and that he's really a descendant of a Jewish tribe. Okay, well, possibly. Now, there are other things about his name, you know, Solomon, as according to Revelation 13:18, there's wisdom in the Bible that helps you identify the name of the Antichrist, and of course that points back to King Solomon, who earned 666 talents of gold every year from his various resources, and he had a double portion of wisdom over everybody else, and yet he went bad in the end and worshipped a, you know, an alien god or a foreign god, and you know, so he does something, the King Solomon did, that the Antichrist of this age is going to do, hasn't done yet. Old King Solomon, when he built the temple, you know, Solomon's temple for God, he consecrated it after the building was completed with this big sacrifice that was piled up there in the front, and he made this long speech to the men of Israel, it says. And then he called down fire from the heavens, which came down and lit the sacrifice pile and it burned it, showing that the offering was accepted by God. The Antichrist of this age is going to bring fire down in the sight of men of the world, not just the men of Israel. That's forecast for this time. Now, we have that technology to drop lasers and even high-voltage charges from the sky on a target now. We don't have a Solomon's Temple. The Sanhedrin in Israel have said that, look, we'd like to go ahead and build this. If the Arabs let us build, we'd like to build Solomon's temple, which is a smaller temple than, you know, the one in Jesus' time. And we want to build it over on the southeast corner of the Temple Mount. You know, and if you would agree to that, then we'd like to start doing that. So they're going to build a temple either there or down the wall from there on the ground in the suburb called Ophel, O-F-E-L, in Jerusalem, which is where the actual Temple of Solomon was built, not up on the Temple Mount. But anyway, be that as it may, we have all this going on in the background. We have a 3,500-year war between the Saudis, the Arabs, and Israel, now apparently coming to a stop and reversing to be a peace agreement with young Prince Bin Salman going over to Israel and making a peace treaty with him and getting the United States and Israel to join with him to attack Iran, his alleged enemy, you know, because they're Sunni Muslim, or the Shiite Muslim rather than Sunni. So all this stuff shows young bin Salman is now moving to the front rapidly. And that's what I first discovered, as I was saying, in 2016, the early part of the year, researching this on Atlantis. Now, if Atlantis was, as I say, and I firmly believe that, the Saudi Peninsula, we have Saudi Arabia owning most of that today. And we know that the island of Dammam, which is just up the coast from Qatar, was where Poseidon's temple was buried under the huge flood and the wash of sand and stuff and mud that came over that area in the flood of Noah. Yet my work with the intelligence agency down in Australia there, where we were researching anti-gravity with Dr. Teller, was that we have a base there. Mankind has a base there just 120 kilometers outside Riyadh in the middle of Saudi Arabia. And it was a base occupied by humans and aliens. They call them aliens in the project. And it is so secret that anybody seen approaching it that it's not on the list of people to come is killed or shot down immediately. You just can't get close to it. Now, that's in Saudi Arabia. Now, we have Mohammed bin Salman is a very young prince, you know, early in his development as far as military strategy. He's 32 years old. Pushing 33 pretty quick, and he, you know, he went into Yemen, you know, when he didn't have as much power as he had now, but he had enough over the army. He went down there and he encountered the terrorists that were sponsored by Iran, and they fought down there. And of course, the Yemeni public is the victim of this. And recently, in fact, this year, two or three times already, the Iranians have launched missiles onto Saudi Arabia toward Riyadh from Yemen. So he's feeling pressure from the south by the Iranians using their proxy down there in Yemen to attack him. So he wants, Mohammed bin Salman wants to attack Iran and destroy them before they get too much nuclear power because of this bad deal that was in place by Obama to give them all the money and the power to do what they're doing. The only way that Mohammed bin Salman can fight a nuclear war is to have nuclear weapons either from Pakistan that have joined with Arabia in this fight against Iran, or from the United States, supplying nuclear weapons to them. Now, the United States has already agreed publicly to supply $150 billion worth of arms to Saudi Arabia, allegedly conventional arms. But now let's shift. In fact, anytime you feel like interrupting, go ahead, guys. I know I'm running a long dial.
No, get on a roll and stay there.
Okay.
It's great.
Okay, in the last 12 days or so, we've seen that the chief of staff was replaced. We've seen that today that Bolton's going to replace, my mind's gone blank anyway, McMaster, and
yes.
as an advisor, a strategic advisor to President Trump. In the last 2 days, Mohammed bin Salman's been over here in the country dealing with President Trump, and we assume with Jared Kushner, has been negotiating the peace deal between Israel and the Arab nations at the moment. And we see these changes where we have a very hawkish chief of state being put in place just before a very hawkish Mohammed bin Salman comes over to visit. And the new, Secretary of State, Pompeo, former CIA director, who would have all the dirty purples on the Arabs, on Iran, everything. He's got all the intelligence at his fingertips. Now, that all that resonates with today's announcement of putting Bolton, a super hawk in power there, as a chief advisor there, not an appointment that the Congress has to approve. It's just the president can choose his advisors, and he chooses him, who is a well-known hawk. This tells you that we're about to go to war, and very suddenly, and it will be a very short war, measured in days, not months or weeks. A nuclear kind of things nowadays are going to make it a short decision in whatever arena it's fought. So, Mohammed bin Salman, even Nostradamus, as unreliable as I put his predictions, has called the third Antichrist age Mabus, M-B-S, with A-N-U between the letters, and A-N-U could very well stand for Arabic Union, which young Mohammed bin Salman has already formed out of 41 nations there, Arab nations, in a consortium to allegedly get rid of terrorism coming out of Iran by the Shiite Muslim group there. So So all these things add up to the fact that this guy is certainly a person to watch closely. Now, what's going to identify him positively? What's going to reveal him as a man of sin if he is the guy? What would you think would be the most widespread action that would identify him?
Well, of course, according to the Bible, he enters into the Temple Mount, and he enters into the temple, or David's tabernacle, whatever it becomes to be.
And what else?
Desecrates it, I guess.
Yeah.
I know you're searching for something else, but...
I'm making you pick your brain a bit there. Go on.
Yeah, the peace treaty.
Peace treaty. Yeah. Yep.
Yes. Now, it's going to be that he ratifies a peace agreement between Israel and the nations. And he will be the prince of that covenant, not the king. He will be a prince that ratifies it. There is a prince, Mohammed bin Salman. He is pushing very hard for a peace treaty with Israel, and the Arab consortium he's formed, using Jared Kushner as his go-between to the White House and to Egypt and a couple of other countries in Jordan. So you see the talk of a peace agreement, and even Mohammed bin Salman has agreed to pay hundreds of billions to the Palestinian people, who aren't really a country, a small people they are, but not a country, to resettle them. And Egypt has agreed to let them resettle further down the coast, in closer to Egypt, on the Sinai Peninsula, and some of them over to Jordan and various other places to be resettled, to make peace in the Middle East. Now, if he ratifies that contract, if that contract comes and is put forward and signed by Israel and the Arab nations, I say to you, that man is the Antichrist of this age.
Do you think there would be a war before that, or and that triggers the peace agreement, or do you think this will all kind of cool off and they will hammer out a peace agreement first? Larry and I have kind of gone back and forth on that, not knowing really which way it's going to go.
You know, there are two invasions of Israel spoken of in the last days, and certainly the Gog Magog one I think will be the large one coming at the end, or in the middle of the tribulation period, somewhere later on. But there's going to be one invasion,
yes,
which happens at the beginning of the tribulation, and if we're at that point now, it will be soon. And that invasion by a foreign army will result in that foreign army being killed, and the bodies of the dead soldiers and stuff left will be, people won't touch them. They'll be contaminated, I don't know, radioactivity or disease or something. And there will be special teams in Israel sent to go and bury them. People will mark where they are with, markers and say, here, a disposal team, go get this guy and bury him. Okay, and it says that Israel will burn the leftover weapons for fire, for fuel, for 7 years after that. Now, you wouldn't think that once the Messiah returns and sets up his kingdom that Israel need to be wood-burning, you know, the weapons of war to keep warm and make dinner and whatever. There would be a different setup going at that time. So I'm thinking this is at the beginning of the seven-year tribulation, just like the seven-year period of burning the fire or the weapons says. If that's the case, and with all the saber-rattling going on in Washington at the moment, with the Chinese threatening to go to war with us, you know, over the trade thing, with the Russians saying, if you touch anything in Syria militarily, that's going to be an act of war. We're coming after you. I think possibly it could happen that we have an invasion and a war, and the peace treaty comes after Israel uses nuclear weapons to dispose of the invading army. And who would that be? Well, now, Holly talks about it in Prophetic Perils, and other evangelical people have said the same thing, that this war will involve Saudi Arabia in the attack on Israel. And if it happens that way, it will be a deception so clever that it fools Israel and a lot of the world, in that the Arabs form a consortium, which they've already done. They pool their military resources, you know, arms, troops, tanks, guns, everything, and they allegedly go in to take out Iran. And whether they reach Iran up through Syria or not, once they get into the tip of Syria there, they are right next in part of the Golan Heights, is part of Syria, according to the Syrians. All that they've got to do is turn left. The Saudi allies turn left and just walk, just this fall down into northern Israel. It's that easy. You know, I've been there myself in a kibbutz, looking across the border into Lebanon up in the northern part. It's very close. So maybe all this is a grand deception to deceive the White House, to deceive Israel and others who would support that alliance into thinking the Arabs are at last at peace, you know, with Israel, and it's, you know, kumbaya, we're going to sing at the fireplace, and that's it. And they're going to turn and attack Israel. Now, if that happens, as Holly was saying in the book, if you look at prophecy, that invading army will be really wounded a lot, and it will have to retreat. And at that point, Israel's land grant will return back to the Abrahamic covenant, and the upper half of Saudi Arabia will belong to Israel. And at that point,
yes,
they can resettle the Palestinians down there and get rid of them. It's just, wow.
So we got to be right on the cusp.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We just absolutely have to be.
Larry, got a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask Stan, you know, that new information coming out of the Middle East about the moving of the Iqaluq air base or assets, you know, of the U.S. and from Qatar, that base, into Saudi Arabia. Is Stan, has he checked to see if possibly that they're putting one of those either at or near that Fallen Ones base or the that underground secret base that you were talking about?
Yes, I've been looking last night. I was going poring over the maps on Bing, which is better than Google Earth because Bing didn't have quite the censorship and a better resolution of the area. They are, from what they said in the article, they're trying to put it at, let me see if I've got here. No, I don't have it up on my sheet there, but they put those bases at two places, one I think just south of Riyadh, another one really south of Riyadh, which is at the King something or other air base, where they train their, you know, their airmen, and where they have you know, a lot of aircraft stored. And I was looking down in that area, trying to find what was 120 kilometers from some point in Riyadh, and certainly it is close to the area. I have snapshotted the areas I've found. I just haven't put them up on the website yet. Plus the plus the GPS coordinates of where I was looking. So if they change it, at least we know that they wiped the record clean from that spot. I did find a base before, as you know, and I've never been able to find the images again on Bing or Google Earth. They just disappeared. Yeah. So, yeah. And Larry, I also wondered about the wisdom of the United States taking those bases over into Saudi Arabia in the case of a deception and, you know, a turnabout and Saudi Arabia going against us and Israel. We have our base assets over there under his control, and he can just wipe them out. I mean, when you move a base, it doesn't immediately become protected and have all the walls up and, you know, guard towers and that kind of stuff. In the process of the move, it weakens our bases while they're being moved. So that means that the attack on Israel and hence on our assets could happen very soon while we're in the move and in chaos. And with the president changing his staff like he's doing, you know, there is behind the scenes, there's a lot of chaos. So it's a good time for America to be attacked, too.
Yeah.
What do you think, Larry?
Larry?
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask Stan also, there's been a considerable amount of U.S. troops and missile batteries being spread all throughout Israel, you know, the south and the north. And, of course, Israel has brought out a lot of their main missile batteries that can not only shoot down incoming or missiles that are fired at them, but also track back and hit the places the missiles are fired from. And they've really brought out the technology. So apparently the U.S. and Israel is preparing for a possible missile attack on Israel. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. And, the you know, ostensibly it is from the Iranians. But, you know, look, the Israeli intelligence must surely suspect, just like I do, and many others for that matter, that you can't trust the Saudi alliance completely. I mean, you just don't wipe out 3,500 years of animus between them with a handshake and a state dinner for the President of the United States. You just don't do that.
Yep, yep.
And you know how Arabs are, and especially Arab Muslims. They are allowed by the Quran to lie to promote the faith, you know, or whatever they call Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are entitled by their religious beliefs to lie to you, to cheat, to steal, whatever, to get the objective. The end justifies the means in that religion. So I just, it's almost like watching young Muhammad bin Salman as he practices stuff he's learned in Sun Tzu's Book of War, you know, the Articles of War.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese, now the Chinese are incredibly consistent with the way they do war. They like to stir up their enemies against themselves. In other words, Russia and America, Israel and the Arabs, let's stir it up so that they fight against themselves and, you know, weaken their defenses and their armies in these battles. And then when the dust settles from that, the Chinese march in and say, okay, now we'll take the prize because we're the strong boy on the block now. We haven't been fighting. We've got all our weapons. We've got our 200 million man army. Let's take over. And I see that happening. I'm watching the Chinese sitting back there just as sly as a fox, waiting for their move.
Yeah, and they are developing fairly extensive high-tech weapons along with it. So I guess the longer you wait, the more, you know, the more advanced they become.
Stuart, think about this. Think about this. The Chinese are making all these weapons, right? Where do we get the majority of our chips and stuff for our electronics and our weapons here?
China. Back doors.
Oh, you've got to be. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I marvel at this. Oh.
Yeah, how can you be that stupid, or is it deliberate?
Well, you know, the Chinese, as far as the globalists are concerned, are kind of the wild card. They've been trying for generations now then to bring China into the fold as part of their globalist plan. But I don't think that China will, in the end, be part of their plan intentionally. Using Russia, North Korea, and the Arab nations, and the Israeli conflict and that, we can see that the world is heading toward one last great conflict where the resolution of it will give us one massive block of people, you know, and religions. The globalists want that. But I also know that the globalists are going to get a surprise in that Satan doesn't honor traitors, especially traitors to humanity. And as soon as his man has control of the global government, excluding China at this point, I think China will play along temporarily, but that'll be about all. As soon as they have control of it, you know, Satan's people, they're going to kill or imprison or destroy the globalists, the bankers, industrialists that we call the Illuminati. These Illuminate ones are going to get a real surprise.
Yeah. Huh. They had I don't know if you saw it, but in the X-Files, where they were dealing with the aliens, they called all the rich guys into the hangar, and then the aliens killed them all. And I thought there was
kind of a
symbolic message there.
Yes, I think I remember. And that's true. Look at things that would gather the support of the right wing, you know, in America and Europe or whatever, those who say there's a global conspiracy going on. What would gather our support would be something like, we beat the Illuminati, you know. The new world leader has discovered these people just like he did in his hometown there in Saudi Arabia, and he arrested all these rich bankers and stuff and industrialists and took the stuff away from them and told them they couldn't be corrupt anymore. And now he's done it to Europe, to England, to the United States, to Canada and Australia. He's gotten rid of all these baddies. People like us that don't know any better will be thinking, holy cow, someone beat the Illuminati. Wow. Get this guy's phone number, you know. Can you see that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And what do you make of Trump? I mean, how do you view him? I'm suspicious of all this.
I'm afraid I have to agree. I voted for the man. I like a lot of the things he's proposing, but the manner of getting there from where we are does seem to be a bit suspect. He's made concessions that we could say he had to because of the democratic process and the pressure from the Senate and the House, but I just don't know. Like you said, caution is probably advised there.
Yeah, what makes me wonder is that all of the deep state people are still walking around. Sessions doesn't do anything. He hasn't done anything to Sessions. Now, I have heard he's going to put Trey Gowdy possibly in to replace Sessions. But for the most part, it's just investigation after investigation after investigation, but nothing is being done. They've already got the evidence on Hillary and Bill and most of these people, and nothing's happening.
Well, let me say this in his defense. That position is such a precarious, involved thing, the President of the United States, that there could be external pressures and delays that he can't avoid trying to do it, because it's not a dictatorship, and he has to go within the framework of the law. So in his defense, I would say that a lot of this could be just the resistance formed by the deep state. I don't know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt there.
Okay. Larry, got another question.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to bring up something else while we're still in the Middle East a little bit. Staying in the Times of Israel today, over in Israel, there's a new report came out. Of course, Israel has come out now and admitted that they took out or struck the nuclear facility in Syria that apparently the North Koreans and Iranians and all were working on back in 2007. But there's an addition onto that now that apparently from satellite images and some intel, it says now, is Assad now building an underground nuke facility? It says site in western Syria near the city of Qusar along the border of Lebanon. It says that the Syrian regime is building something underground near Qusar, Syria, possibly a storage for nuclear materials, chemical weapons, and ballistic missiles. Have you heard of that, or what's your opinion on the lifeline of that facility?
Well, every country that's kind of developed militarily has gone underground with their facilities. They're very important facilities. We know that the Iranians have been doing underground research for, gosh, I've been aware of it for 3 or 4 years. This new base that they're announcing, I don't know whether that release of information is just a red herring or whether it's to let people kind of start to know this is why we're going to attack them. Definitely, I suspect them of having underground facilities, just like we do, just like the Russians, just like the Chinese. I mean, in this age, you want to get down deep and out of the way of spying eyes in the sky, and you want to be able to transmit goods and materials and people between these bases, so you have underground tunnel systems that are built. And there are companies in Germany and Japan and here that make huge tunnel boring machines that go at 1 mile a day, that kind of thing, generating tunnel holes that are like, 40 feet in diameter and stuff like that, a four-story building in diameter. And some of these machines will actually lay concrete around the wall as they're going on the mesh and stuff, so they've got a finished tunnel, for people to move into. So these things have been going on since, the 70s. So Iran's doing it. Well, they're probably doing it with the help of technology from, Russia, Germany, pick a place in there. And Germany still is not super happy with Jewish occupation of Israel. And so the Saudis have been friends with Germany for some time as a result, and technologically changes have been made, even in the maritime stuff and in submarines. So the Iranians, going through Syria, the Russians going through Syria gives the Russians access to the Syrian seaport. The Iranians going through Syria and over into Lebanon, or at least to the border, gives them quasi-access to invading Israel from the north. It's a pincer movement, to get pincers around Israel, and we've got the Saudis from the southeast, and we've got at the moment Turkey's unhappy with Israel, and Jordan certainly, and Syria obviously, but Syria's got its own problems. So it's just surrounding Israel with enemies. It's just mind blowing. It's like what was that movie where you had you know, the guy with his pitchfork standing against the armies of Rome, you know, what was his name? Anyway, you know, he's fighting the Roman army. It's like Israel right there in the center, little tiny Israel fighting the armies of the Arab nations and part of Europe. And it's going to take a miracle, as the Bible says, several of them probably, to protect Israel, the land, and allow the people of you know, the Hebrew nation, wherever they are, to be gathered in there and survive.
I got a question.
Only one?
Trump's been to Saudi Arabia. Trump's been to Saudi Arabia. And others, I guess, have gone there. And do you think this has anything to do with that Area 51 type base they've got? And how does that tie to Antarctica?
Well,
and what they're finding down there.
Antarctica is, as far as we know, is they've been using steam to reclaim a city they found under the ice, allegedly, okay? Now, if there is a civilization they've discovered there under the ice, it doesn't surprise me at all, because as I explained on the video on the YouTube channel there, Atlantis was only one, you know, that was the Saudi location, one of at least 12 spots of civilization where the fallen ones came and landed and lived. Now, before the flood, the Pangaea, like all the nations of the earth, the continents, were all together in one landmass.
Yes.
Had big rivers in between them, you know, but they were one landmass. Now, I'm saying this, I know a lot of people that are, you know, physicists or geologists are going to say, oh, no. Pangaea broke up 100 million years ago. And I'm saying your dating is all wrong. It happened less than, you know, 6,000 years ago. In fact, it's probably closer to about 4,500 years ago. Anyway, before that, the South Pole was up part of, you know, where Australia hooked into the eastern side of India and the southern part of Indonesia, which is up in hugging against China. Everything was one landmass. When the impacts of the asteroids or comets, whatever, hit the Earth that caused the flood and the breakup of the continents, when that happened, the South Pole went into a region, you know, in the Southern Pole region where it froze, and it was a quick freeze. It wasn't, you know, slow. Now, it was a sudden impact that moved it around, you know, down there, and then eventually, within 100 years, the planet expanded as well to its present diameter, which is about a third bigger than it was. It's 25% of our current diameter, but a third bigger than it was. All of this could have taken one of the 12 settlements of the follow-ons down to the South Pole and deep frozen. Okay? Now, they're gone. But yet, the ones in Saudi Arabia, they were principally destroyed, their buildings and everything and their livestock, and killed by the flood, except for those that survived on the other side of the flood in Canaan there, and where God told Joshua, take your armies, go in there, and kill these villages which have giants and hybrid animals and kill man, woman, child, everything living there because they're unclean, bad genes from the Atlantean group. So they were then wiped out. So any returning from that point on had to come when these fallen ones are cast out of the heavens down to earth now because the flood and Joshua got rid of all the ones we knew about. Well, South America, Central America, North America, China, England, and Northern England, all these places where pyramids and ancient cultures have sprung up worshiping fallen super gods, you know, Quetzalcoatl and the things at Stonehenge. You know, all these were, I think, pointing to civilizations that have been set up, you know, like cities and city-states, by the fallen ones that came with Poseidon, who was probably Satan himself, into Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, I think that this thing down at the South Pole could be revealing part of that civilization and may be used as part of the explanation to say to the people that don't know any better, yes, we were here before, you know, we had a civilization, and then the great disaster happened, now we're back to help mankind reestablish itself and make peace. And in Riyadh, in south of there where that base is, with a technology, it's bound to be much more involved than it was when I was in the program. The technology will be what Satan gives to the Antichrist of this age, because he's going to help him with technology to overthrow, you know, the fortresses of the deep, you know, the enemies with technology.
Yes.
He's going to give to him. Look in Daniel, you see that. So it fits that that base would be the site of operations that would supply the technology to Mohammed bin Salman, in this case, to defeat the superpowers of the planet.
Oh, Larry.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in. Stan, have you done any more work on the arrival? I don't want to leave the Middle East if you want to talk some more on that, but I was wondering about your arrival investigations and research. Is there any new data, particularly on the type of arrival, when, where, and how? And I know we talked on the show before, and you said, well, they'll come from out there, but they'll also show themselves here.
Yeah. I have been noticing that the UFO stats for this year are up considerably over the last 2 or 3 years. It's more than a flap. I think that the increase in sightings and the leaks, you know, at government level, not only in this country, but in Europe and Australia and Canada, are letting us know that that their announcement is very close. This arrival, you call it, is like well, like the movie Arrival, but also like the movie in the series V, which came out in the mid-70s.
Yes.
You know, that was just so well done. You have it based along biblical lines that they come from out there somewhere, meaning peace and love and no harm to us. And they're really lizard or reptilians like the snake in the garden, but they're really those kind of beings that are dressed up in human skins to deceive us and to, you know, win the whole world by flatteries and by exchanging technologies to cure cancer and this kind of stuff, but never letting us have their, you know, anti-gravity and all that kind of stuff. And eventually they're defeated by a hybrid human alien baby that is born, and the baby dies, and the distilled blood of it is a chemical that they can reproduce, and it's using the blood of that to cleanse the planet of the evil, which is almost like the blood of Jesus cleansing us, you know, from sin and from evil. So the parallels there were just wunderbar. I tried to contact the author several times, and of course probably a million other people did too, so I never heard back. But his approach to it was really quite exceptional, putting into a secular story what is in the Bible about what is about to happen. And we've had so much conditioning over the last 50, 60 years even about the aliens from space first being terrible, evil, frightful things, and now moving toward, you know, okay, well, they're not so bad. They're going to come and be peaceful with us, and they'll show us how they did it in their world and their galaxy and whatever. And it's being sold as a group of individuals, different types of physiological structures and things, coming to Earth from some other place in our galaxy or perhaps in the known universe, but limiting it to this universe, which, you know, we're told in the scripture is not the real world. It's a creation for this purpose, you know, to select the beings that are going to replace those being cast out of the heavens. And that's a parallel universe, at least one, maybe several levels above us. And so anything these guys can do in the press here to make our attention focused in this universe down on the Earth and on parallel civilizations all over the place, and that there is no God, it's just, you know, these beings that have evolved. Anything along those lines that can be done is being done in the media. And, you know, I forget which shows they are, but Holly and I have watched in the past 10 years, we've watched a new sci-fi show come up that would be like, you know, very informative and lead people to think the right kind of things toward the biblical solution. And these things don't last more than one season. They disappear.
Yeah.
Is it because they've done their job, or they were getting too much support from the evangelical group trying to point it to it as an example? I don't know.
Well, it just seems that, you know, like you were saying, I mean, from virtually kindergarten through doctoral level, you know, they're preaching that doctrine. And so I can see why the whole world, point to the strong delusion of the Bible as part of the arrival? I've always thought that probably the arrival puts the cap on it,
the
strong delusion.
I do. I mean, others have tried in the past to say that it would be leading Christianity astray. Certainly what happened to the delusion will do that, leading Judaism astray or whatever. But it is focused on a global basis, which means it has to be above religions, above economies, above politics, above genealogies and that kind of stuff. So a global thing to be a delusion, to fool the world, would have to be something on a global scale, and the invasion from space would be that kind of a thing. And there's so much press, so much media that is focused on this and different views that it, of the way it might happen, if we're lucky, they're thinking, that, it's in the human psyche. It's the millennial generation is just part of what it is. They're not too upset about the possibility, probably in the main not even seeing the threat of it as the great delusion transpires. And I am seeing, in talking to people in the streets and whatever, wherever we go, I am seeing this blindness in people to even being interested in what's about to happen. Holly and I both just shake our heads at the end of the day saying, how can they not see? Our world is ready for something to happen that is so horrific that it's going to force a global government and a new power on the planet, and the evidence will become more apparent as far as invasion. But we are at a pregnant point in human history where we will either live or die as a planet, and people are still talking about, where are you going for your holiday this summer?
I always thought that when the prophecies became fulfilled right under their faces, that there'd be a much more interest in it from the Christian world. It seems to be going just the opposite. The more that happens, the further away they seem to go.
Well, I'm
not sure why,
it,
but
as you are, I'm sure. I'm just astounded by this.
Yeah.
Well,
what you were talking about on Phoenix Rising from Mary Summerrain. Let me read a little bit of this. I want your comment on it. She says, "Beings gonna come more, much more. They come from there." She points to the sky. This is that Noyes is a blind Indian shaman woman.
Right.
You mean the alien beings, the UFOs? This is Mary Summerrain responding. "Beings gonna show more and more. They no gonna hide, play games. It be time they show they be here really all along." Then she goes on to say, "It be good when peoples believe, cause they gonna see with own eyes. They gonna have to believe. It not be good when peoples gonna question state about stuff state already know about for long time. They gonna be plenty angry at state. They gonna want to know why state hides stuff from people. They gonna make people no trust state." And here's the clincher of what she says. "I'm not done here. People's gonna question church now. How about what church say about spirits? How about what church say about first man, first woman? Summer, that no stand up now. People's gonna be much angry at church too, even." What do you think about that one?
Wow. Well,
sums it up.
It does. And when she says that people are gonna be angry at state,
yes.
What I was saying earlier about people are angry at the Illuminists, that run the joint, and you can see that that's laying the groundwork for state to be destroyed by the ones coming. And everybody will think
she claims here they're going to have proof that they're going to bring proof with them that they
about,
are our creators.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, imagine them coming out of their thing with a stereo holographic display of this crucifixion or something in Jerusalem, actually taken there. Satan has that technology, or he did at the time. So,
yes.
Yeah. People will say, oh, yeah, okay, right. And Jesus was just one of your prophets, was he? He wasn't the Son of God. No, he's just one of us, right? You can see that delusion being spread easily. People will believe a lie because they want to.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Well, Larry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to mention to Stan real quick. He was talking about how that they're taking
you know, anything about Jesus or whatever out of a lot of the movies now. There was an old book back years ago. Matter of fact, Madeline Lell Engel wrote it. It's called A Wrinkle in Time. It's about time travel and portals and et cetera. And they actually made a DVD that's great if you get to watch it. It's A Wrinkle in Time is the name of it. But they've just come out, and these originally the book, and it was for children, and the movie was for young people. It had in it a darkness that was coming, a supernatural darkness that was taking over parts of the universe and the world, and it really tied in to spirit beings and angels, and Jesus was in it, and all kind of stuff. And what's interesting, they just put out a new movie a couple of weeks ago, A Wrinkle in Time, they call it. It's a copy of this with Oprah Winfrey and others, but they've taken everything Christian, including Jesus and the supernatural, other than their portals and stuff. They're using that, but they've revamped that entire book and movie now into a new DVD that it's dropped everything Christian out of it or biblical. And so this just ties into what you said, Stan. They're working that direction.
I know. You know, you're talking about the time travel stuff and that, and The Wrinkle in Time. It reminds me of an argument, or shall I say a debate, I had with a university professor down in Australia years ago at a social gathering, and he was saying, there's no proof of God, you know. And I said, well, maybe so. I said, hey, what about time travel, Professor? I said, do you think mankind will ever develop the ability to travel in time? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Maybe not in our lifetime, but he said, yeah, technology will get to the point where we can travel back and forth in time. And then I said to him, well, then I pose this to you. From the first moment that the first human enters a time cabinet and enters into time wherever he goes, then from that moment on, there always was a God. And he looked at me and he thought, what? I said, when you control time and events, you know, you become God. And from the beginning, you always were. And so it crossed his eyes. He went for another drink, and I never saw him again. But, you know, I love doing that kind of stuff. makes him think, try to get out of that Ivy League set. But anyway, yeah, there are a number of geophysical things going on, too, as we talked about, Stuart, you and I, earlier about the sun.
Yes. Yes.
I hate to just jump over to the subject, but it does play in the crisis curves. The sun is entering into what will be an anomalous, not totally unheard of before, but a very low sunspot minimum, which means it's going to be cooler on the whole for our planet. Various portions of the planet will be hotter, but various portions will be a lot colder. Now, this happened, gosh, twice before, one called the Maunder Minimum, when the Thames River in England froze over so hard for several years that people were holding, you know, putting their shops on the ice and selling there on the ice of the Thames. excuse me. There's another one called the Dalton Minimum as well. Now, that occurred in between, in the first quarter century of the 1800s. The Maunder Minimum occurred back in about the middle to the first quarter of, you know, from say 1650 to 1750 or 20, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. Okay, now these ages were cold, and they were when sunspot activity was at a minimum. What I see now, certainly I agree that the sunspots are minimal, but we're seeing tears in the coronal atmosphere of the sun opening up and releasing huge amounts of solar wind at our planet, which is affecting our weather and our magnetic field. And this is different now than it was, you know, back in the Maunder period or the Dalton period, because our Earth's magnetic field is weakening greatly right now. It has been doing that for, you know, centuries, and it's coming to a point where it's going to allow the North and South Pole to flip-flop upside down. The influence of the solar wind from the sun and its magnetic field as well, which gets through cracks in our magnetic field, is becoming more effective as our magnetic field on Earth weakens, and it can accelerate the flip of the magnetic poles. It can do a number of things with our weather, with the charge that it induces into the upper atmosphere, into the ionosphere. All these things affect our weather. So, yes, this is a historic solar minimum for more reasons than just a low sunspot number. So it is something to watch, because I'm sure in God's plan this will be what plays out with some of the major changes in the Earth's environment to affect famine and warfare as a result of it. In fact.
Question.
Sorry.
In the book of Isaiah, it talks about the sun going into, I guess, what you call mini nova, where it's seven times brighter, the moon becomes as bright as the sun. How does that, would this be part of this very anomalous deep minimum that suddenly it flares?
Yes, I think it will flare, because also in the Old Testament, I don't know whether it's Isaiah or was it Ezekiel? I'm just trying to remember where I read it, about the, there will be a cloud surround the sun. Was that in Isaiah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that cloud could be the debris it throws off as it does a phase state change heading toward the early stages of red giant. Now, think about this. It says when the increase in light is, you know, seven times what it is now, and the waters will boil, the fish will die, the green grass and trees will all burn up, and, you know, okay, on one-third of the planet. Now, in my studies, I realize that there is one-third of the Earth's surface always facing the sun for direct radiation. Some of the slant rays coming off don't really light up the planet, because the terminator or the shadow line of the Earth doesn't get direct radiation, even though that half of the planet is facing the sun. Only about a third of the planet's surface area is really harmed by the direct radiation. So if this happens in a sudden event, you can see where it would burn a third of the Earth's surface and kill everything on it at that moment. And it would create horrendous weather systems, and you know, like nuclear winter and hurricanes and fires and smoke and all this kind of stuff, which would last for months, perhaps years, after the event. Even though two-thirds of the planet wasn't fried, the third that was, the results of that will change our weather system, our food sources, everything, which could be part of the judgments that you see by the angels in the book of Revelation. Do you see what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, Larry, and this, got a question?
Yeah, I was going to also mention, Stan, you remember years ago when you were living in Australia and you and I talked, and at that time there was a new red tide of some kind, or amoeba or something that was a mutation growing around Australia and the waterways. Well, that's increased with the sun activity. A lot of that has increased. Where did this lead us today?
Well, at that time, it was an archaeobacteria that was frozen in the ice at the South Pole that was released by the warming waters around the South Pole, and they bred like crazy because they had no natural enemy. And so, of course, they invaded, in this case, the fish. What do you call it? Not salmon. It was, the tip of my tongue. It'll come to me in a minute. Anyway, a particular breed of fish that proliferates around the coast of Australia from Queensland all the way down through South Australia and back around to Perth and up the coast of West Australia. And this particular breed of fish caught that archaeobacteria in its skin and its mucus, and it spread like wildfire, consuming them and killing them. And their dead bodies in the hundreds of millions fell to the ocean floor and washed up on the shore. Strangely enough, they were sardines. That's what they were, sardines, you know, big sardines. And strange enough, flies did not land on them, and they did not deteriorate like normal dead fish would on the shore. These archaeobacteria just ran everything off. Now, okay, it's kind of like red tide with, instead of archaeobacteria, it was some kind of a flora type of development, which we've seen over the years in various countries, particularly where it's hot and salty. Now, will that increase? Probably so. Will our food chain be impacted by this and many other things? Yes. You know, the good Lord is going to use what he's created as part of the judgment on the world in the tribulation period. We can expect more of that. In fact, did you see that article today? It's part of mankind's doing to a degree where there is an area twice the size of Texas floating out in the Pacific. Just garbage. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. I couldn't believe it. Twice the size of Texas. Texas is pretty big.
Yeah, I know. And the refuse gets thrown out there by people, I guess, just dumping their tanker waste or garbage scows that go out there and dump it to get rid of it, you know, secretly. But it's washing up, and it's creating this floating bacterial mass, which could do what you're talking about, Larry. It could be, you know, a breeding ground for some of these things that will be exotic diseases that will not only kill marine life, but land life and air life.
Wow.
Birds and humans.
We're having die-offs of just about everything. And what's interesting is that if you go, I think it's Space Weather, Larry knows, the radiation level keeps climbing, and that's not necessarily from the sun. They're claiming it's coming from maybe the Milky Way or you know, deep space. But it's climbing. And I read an FAA report where they were warning pregnant stewardesses not to fly the polar regions now.
Well, this
is radiation
a number of things. Yeah, this cosmic radiation is increasing. Because when we have sunspots and they shoot out the particle streams that they do, this does shield the Earth from a lot of the cosmic radiation from deep space that we're talking about. Of course, for gamma radiation, we're done anyway, but for normal, you know, like X-ray and various other things in the radiation bands that we're susceptible to,
mm-hmm.
If you have a good solar sunspot cycle, it shields us from that. When you have low sunspot activity, our shield is dropped, and when our magnetic field of the planet is also weakening, which it is, then our defenses are way down, and it's like in Star Trek, the shields are at 5%, Captain, what do we do? They're getting through, and so I agree, yeah, that you can see why. Whether it's a new event in the galaxy somewhere or not, I don't know, but as far as our defenses being down, yes, they are down.
Oh. Does anybody know what happens when you have a total flip of the magnetic poles, let alone a crustal shift?
Well, they debate it a lot. I don't know that any of us have got evidence of what really happened when it did in the past, because in the past reversals of the poles, they didn't have electricity and electronics and stuff, and the results are recorded in fired clay and stuff like that. You look at the orientation of the atoms, but the forecast is that it will be dependent upon how fast the pole reversal occurs. Is it in minutes, days, hours, weeks, months? The longer it takes, the more damage from radiation we're going to get to living forms on the planet. The quicker it occurs, the more damage we're going to get to electronics and to life forms that depend on navigating the north-south and could even generate lightning storms in various places that never happened before, make super lightning bolts as that magnetic field flips. On NASA, you can see they have a super model from their supercomputer there showing that we have three pairs of north-south clusters inside the planet. Inside the core of the planet, there are three sets of north-south vortices, if you wish, in the magma. Now, two of them are more toward the North Pole. One of them is more at the South Pole. These things wander around during a polar shift, and the two at the North Pole seem to be separating, so that we have, in essence, two North Poles and a South Pole. But they also have the opposite pole attached underneath that vortex. It's organized that way up in the Northern Hemisphere. I've wondered, you know, about the way these things affect the electricity flow in the Earth. If the increase in temperature at the poles is because this is increasing the ion current flow from the core out to the poles and warming the poles more than normal because the poles are fixing to appear somewhere else. We know that there are a number of airstrips over in the eastern states and down in Florida that have already repainted the magnetic north sign for their landing strips.
Yes.
People had to change it on their aircraft and stuff because it has definitely changed. And it's not because some great big massive iron deposit in northern United States and Canada has shifted so that the deviation has changed. It is a shift of the entire dynamic electric field of the Earth. Mm-hmm. We're not getting away
from
that. Yeah,
I flew in and out of Minneapolis, and they had to change the runways.
There you
alignment.
Go.
So that's the way it works. Gulf of Mexico, what's your take on this hot spot that's developing? And there's been some earthquakes down around there, too.
Well, Gulf of Mexico, what portion are you talking about?
Well, there's a hot spot that's about, what is that, Larry, about 160 miles offshore? And they're not quite sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's where they found it. We've been noting, though. You know, I remember a few years ago, Stan was talking about we better watch out whenever we start having earthquakes in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're having them in southern and western Texas the last few months, and I've noted one or two out in the Gulf itself, about 100 miles off the coast of Texas, and I was wondering if Stan knew, there are some rumors that possibly there's a crack in the basin of the Gulf of Mexico, but, you know, we don't know that rumor.
Well, I must confess ignorance on that. I was not aware of this hot spot being an issue. I do know about the smaller quakes occurring in Texas, which seem to be, you know, new. And we know that the Gulf of Mexico was formed originally by the asteroid impact, the Chicxulub impact on the peninsula down there. But the impact ring of that goes up through Texas. And I know from studying earthquakes on the planet now that where large asteroids hit and came to rest, the rim ahead of where they came to rest is where we see a weakness in the Earth's crust and a lot of earthquakes. Now, if this is becoming active, as you say, it might be due to the weakness caused by the Chicxulub impact there. I haven't seen that article. Is it in the news or is it just in the Internet?
It's on the Internet. It's posted on All News Pipeline, and I think Quayle had it up on his side and a couple others. It's not a big article, but it's talking about a hot spot down in the Gulf of Mexico and, you know, some quaking activity down that direction.
Well, I'll have to look that up, guys. I'm sorry I missed that with everything else going on.
Yeah, there's an awful lot going on. How about Yellowstone? What's your take on Yellowstone? Seems to be a lot of activity there.
Yeah, the steamboat guys are there, seems to be active at the moment. It waxes and wanes as far as what is reported by the USGS, but I can't really trust the USGS reports out of Yellowstone because I know from, you know, firsthand reports from people there that the USGS has made people sign non-disclosure agreements to the government for putting in more detectors there and for the pipeline, the data pipeline that goes down to probably to eastern Utah to the NSA center there, monitoring all of Yellowstone on a real-time basis with a supercomputer. So I know that they are worried about it, and certainly there's evidence that the northwest part of the park, the magma underneath there is kind of moving toward the northeast, I believe it is. So it's another thing to watch, whether it will trigger, you know, when the West Coast falls off or some other thing will trigger, I don't know. But it's certainly something to watch.
Which do you think will happen first? I mean, obviously, there's probably no way of knowing, but there's been all these prophecies about the West Coast dropping off, then the East Coast, and then we got this possibility of the Great Lakes, huge earthquake around the Chicago area. What would be your guess? I know there was an article written by some Russian scientists that the North American plate was beginning to break up, and they were warning scientists over here, you better start looking out. Things are starting to change. What's your take?
Well, really, it's going to be like a crystal ball question you asked me, because which will go first?
I know.
I did have years ago, probably what, 15, 16 years back, maybe 18 years ago, a dream vision in which I was up over the west coast of the United States in the air. Looking to my left was Mount St. Helens area and all the way down to Mexico City on my right. And I looked down toward Mexico City. And there were at least six, maybe eight volcanoes all erupting at the same time as the West Coast started to separate from the United States, you know, the lower 48. And the eruptions were all at the same time. They were throwing ash, wet ash, and cinders and stuff up into the air, making travel for people trying to get east across the mountains impossible because the roads were so slick, the roads that were still connected anyway, that people were sliding off into valleys and stuff off the side of these mountains because of the wet ash on the road. So that was there. And then sometime later, I had a dream vision in which I came into the air over the United States, because America was still in the Strait at the time, and I was over in the western area. It was nighttime, and there was an illumination, you know, like light I could see there in basically where Colorado area is, in the kind of desert type region. And there were hundreds of little tents there, in which there was a single cot in each tent with a nightstand and a time clock, an alarm clock. And I landed there and went with my right hand and would go into these tents and reach through the webbing of spider web around everyone, each one in each tent sleeping. I would remove the webbing from them and say, look, get up. You've overslept. Your alarm is already gone off. Get up and come forward. And these were like watchmen of the Christian faith. And got them all up and got them together in front of me, and they were facing west, and I was facing east looking at them and was saying, okay, you know, it begins now. And what it is, I'm not sure, because I could see the yellow twinkling kind of firelight on their faces from something behind me. And I turned around and looked behind me, and it was like a waterfall of pieces of burning something, you know, leaving wiggly tails of fire falling out of the sky and down onto the ground over toward California. And I woke up. So that seems to me to be what I was informed would be the thing to look for, as opposed to what happens over in the New Madrid region and stuff like that. So I don't know.
Are you familiar with Barry Rothman?
No, I don't think so.
Well, he's a Bible code fellow. He's been working. This is one of the things I wanted to get into, if we can, a little bit. He's been working on time. And on one of his codes, I'll give you the words, and I just was wondering what you would think about it. Here are the words that have been found in the matrix of the Bible code. Time machine, tachyon, boson, and the end of days, and Noah was 600 years old, and the flood was. How would you interpret those kind of words?
Well, I don't know. It seems like a hodgepodge of stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, in a way it does. I was wondering, though, because it appears now, boson would be, wouldn't that be Higgs boson and CERN, do you think? Have you heard any more about CERN, by the way?
The first thing that came to mind was CERN, of course, and what they're doing. Let me just interject here. I just had the internet looking for that hotspot in the Gulf of Mexico, and they say that it is a bogus report that the area was supposed to be 133 degrees. Sounds like an official weather report, but it's not even close. In fact, we took the information to Rick Coffin, a professor at Texas A&M. He chairs the Department of Physical and Environmental Science. He told us that temperature reading is not even possible. The YouTube video that shows a volcano in the Gulf is a hoax.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
anyway,
that answers that.
Well, now,
what's your take on CERN?
Okay. Let me just finish that article there. It was from March the 5th from Channel 6. I don't know whether that's Corpus Christi or what, but anyway. So it's 14 days old, that report. I don't know whether that was before or after any more stuff that you saw on it. Okay, now CERN. As I've said before, what they're playing with at CERN is sponsored by many nations on the planet. It's very important to the powers that be in the background for some reason. And it's not to see what the basic fundamental particle of the universe is, you know, the God particle, they call it. If anything, it is an effort to try to create an artificial portal, I believe, between our universe and a parallel one. And this is not a new concept. I mean, even Einstein talked about it to some of his students in the university years ago, because I met one of the students and we talked about it. But this parallel universe or concentric universe concept was around when Einstein was around. The idea being that the parallel universes to us occupy the same space we do, but out of phase with us. If they contract down toward a center and the atoms of that universe come together and are solid, and then, you know, an event takes place there, and to the people in that universe, it seems to be a continuous event process. Time is continuous. But yet, if it's every 100 million years even, that the atoms all come together, the people, you know, and the physical processes in that universe wouldn't know any different because they only interact when they're at a concentration, so that our atoms pass between each other as the compression of one universe goes down to its finite operating point and then back out again. And so as these universes are passing next to each other, would there be a possibility of opening up a gateway, a portal between these two universes right here on the Earth's surface? Not necessarily so much to go like the Stargate thing did, to go to other galaxies and stuff, but to go to a parallel universe right here. And that CERN object with the circular donut shape and with these extremely high speeds of the particles they're doing may be an attempt to open up this portal. I mean, why else would they have the Indian god Shiva statue out in front of it? I mean, it's just not Christian or Jewish philosophy. It is something going back to, you know, the days of Brahma and stuff and the Indian religions, which did speak of the gods coming through like that and having wars. Even Ezekiel's flaming chariot that he saw, it appeared in the sky as smoke and fire, and then came down and cooled off, and he was able to relate the vision and stuff. But Jesus said to Mary in the garden, "Don't touch me, for I've not yet ascended." Some of the extra biblical transcripts of that say that when Jesus was about to go up on the mount and ascend, that as he started to ascend, sparks of lightning shot out in his feet, you know, and he rose up into the sky where, you know, he was joined by Moses and Elijah and went on up into the heavens and disappeared. Again, Satan is the prince of the air, and above that and outside of that must be where God is. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
Maybe
yes.
You have to get through that gateway, and maybe that's what CERN is playing with. I can't see any real valid reason for spending hundreds of billions of dollars to find out what the God particle is. I just can't.
Could they be looking at time travel?
Well, that's a possibility. Certainly the physics that do exist at the moment, as far as mankind's physics, do say that traveling forward in time, making leaps forward in time, are possible, but leaps backward aren't possible.
Do you think that the past, present, and future still exist?
In our minds, yes. In the mind of God, they are static.
Think
about God like this. Think about God like this. He's a projectionist, and he's projecting up on the wall with one of these slide carousels that we used to have back in the old days. And the slide would drop in and project an image of time of what's happening in the universe up on the screen. Now, he has access to the slides that have gone through the projector and are behind it. He can take slides out from behind and put them ahead, rearrange them any way he wants, because he is out of time. He is outside of that. He is handling the events externally. So to him, it's static. It's pieces being put together. Whoever God is, whatever God is, he's not going to be replaced by anything else. God is and always was. When Moses asked him what he was, he says, "I am that I am." And that's all you need to know.
It's very curious because of their research. Now, did you do some research on time and time travel, or at least an attempt to do it? I know I've seen pictures on the internet, but I've always questioned whether they had any veracity to them or not. Of, you know, somebody shows up in an old time picture that's obviously wearing modern, but you can fake all that pretty easy nowadays.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I mean, I've talked about time and time travel, whether it's possible or not, and what, you know, the result would be and things like that. But as far as doing research myself, no. The most I've done is play with gravity and, you know, how to, you know, make artificial gravity and things like that. But it's one of my favorite subjects. I mean, Holly will tell you, if a sci-fi movie comes on, it says, and time travel, I'll say, well, oh, turn that in, please. I'll watch that. So I am.
Yeah, back to the back to the
back
future.
Back to the future, I enjoyed that, yeah. Yeah, it was fun. But realistically speaking, I think that God is the only one who has access to altering time. And that anybody who tries to, from the creation, from us, we're created, anyone that tries to get into the out of the time loop and be as God to affect time will find it difficult. Because God has all the pieces there in his slide projector, and he can just take that piece out. It's not going to happen.
Okay, now here's a good question, and I'm curious about it. The rapture of the church, they're taken to another dimension, right?
I think
it seems like
the
door, you know, it's a door.
Yep. Well, Jesus doesn't actually come down to the earth in that event. He only comes to earth, returns, you know, one more time. But he does send his friends to collect his bride, to collect him up, to be with him where and go wherever he is. Does the bride or the church, do they go to a parallel universe? Or, you know, that would be another dimension, I guess is the way you could say it. I think they do, because they spend 7 days there while 7 years goes on down here on the earth. They're at a different rate of time passage. And in Scripture, they've made references to how vast the difference is between God's time and ours, where 1,000 years is but a day, or, you know, to God in his mindset. And I can see how that can happen, because the passage of time is really, in our mindset, is related to physical and chemical events that interact. You know, atoms moving, and, you know, a clock, you know, the donger on the clock, the timepiece swings back and forth, or a silicon atom vibrates at, or silicon oxide vibrates at so many thousand times a second, or a cesium atom changes its dimension so many times a second, and that's how we determine a second has passed. And it's all relative. There's no real dimension of time. It's a ratio. We always measure the movement, change in size, change in position of one thing relative to another. How many years has it been? Well, a year is when the Earth has moved its position around the sun to this spot again, relative to what? You see what I'm saying? It's there are no absolute units. It's just a pure ratio. Time does not exist.
So that's why they probably call it the space-time continuum, because you got to have space, you got to have time together, even though they say they don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I've gone through the mathematics and mathematically derived the fact that time is just a pure ratio. And you don't even have to get the equations to look at this and say, okay, what is time? How do we measure time? Well, it's actually changes in energy state of things compared to other things changing their energy state. Solar years, Earth years, galactic years. You see what I'm saying? It's all relative.
Yeah.
It's purely relative.
There was a fellow over in, I can't remember, but Bosnia and that area. He was a mystic. And he said that there was coming a cosmic wave, and that when it hit the Earth, it would make people vanish. And I was wondering, and I've heard that before. In fact, Cliff High and the Bots, and he's definitely an atheist of atheists. He even mentioned about a wave and people vanishing. What would be your take on that? Could this be a cosmic or gravitational wave that distorts time and space, and that could be connected to the rapture?
I think that they can allude to that, explaining the rapture so that those left behind don't panic. You know, you'd hate to think that these crazy Christians were correct and that they've been taken off to a safe place while the Earth gets judged horribly. People believe what they want to believe, especially if the alternative is, you know, the truth is too frightening to consider. I have debated with members of the Theosophical Society in Australia, who had members from Findhorn, as well,
yes,
debating with me. And they concede that a large segment of the well, not a large, but a big portion of the population of the Earth will be taken off the Earth all at once. They concede that. But they say it is because those people's attitude, their vibrations, their spiritual development is not up to what it should be for this age, and that they are going to be sent back to incarnate in other planets and times so that they can relearn their lesson before they're, you know, rejoined to the harmony of what the Earth will become. So they're saying those taken off are ones who need to be retrained, and that those that are left behind have reached, you know, the level of understanding and spiritual development, that they are in harmony with the Earth and with the purpose of the universe and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we discussed the rapture from my viewpoint and the re-education plan from his viewpoint, and we looked at each other across the audience. We were separated by several rows from our podiums, and I looked at him after we had both put our case forward, and he looked at me straight in the eye, and I just shook my head, and I said, you know, like, I got your number, and he looked at me and said, I got your number, and we had the standoff there.
Yeah.
And this is going back 30 years now, 35 years. That long ago.
Yeah, and their attitude doesn't seem to change much.
No.
A friend of mine said, why is it that a UFO knot comes here from 40,000 light years away, and all he has to say is that Jesus was an idiot? And we can't believe him. You would think that they could come up with a different scenario.
I mean,
why would they do that in the first place?
Well, it's a very clever deception. Don't forget, Satan is aware of the Bible, the content of all the prophecies, and the truth and the falsity of them, and, you know, of anything that has been altered from them. He's been behind it, I'm sure. So, long before we had the technology or the media and the knowledge base like the internet and stuff to explore these possibilities of what is coming with the other life forms, long before that, he was preparing events and documents to condition us to accept it as the Bible is not being true, that the truth is what he's presenting. And I Satan, let's not forget, he's a very bright and wonderbar creature that God created. He just used his free will to go the wrong direction, and that's what we're dealing with, a really mighty intelligence.
Yeah. Larry, got any final question? We got about 2 minutes.
Well, I was just going to ask Stan, I know he was friends with the Hopi, and I just wondered if they'd ever contacted him after his visits with them and updated him on any activity or when they thought. And also, Tom Horn and Quayle and some of those put a book out recently talking about some of the Indian Native American elders told them that there are portals underground at certain locations across the country that they're allowed to use occasionally. And I didn't know if you'd heard about that or not.
No, the first part of the question, the Hopi have not told us anything new because we haven't talked to them now in a few years. As far as the underground portals and who told it to Quayle and Horn, I'm just like you. I have no idea if such things exist. However, I tell you the Australian Aborigines have the same legends in that they used to walk underground from Australia over to Africa, and that was when they were closer together, I'm sure. But they do talk about these underground pathways, and that, to me, is not impossible. There could have been natural formations or intelligently made formations, but whether they're active today or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd say they'd be pretty warm.
Yeah, depending on how deep they are.
That's right.
Well,
that's
thanks
right.
a lot, Stan, for coming on. Any final shot you want to give everyone? I think it's a heads up myself.
It's a heads up. It's watch the news, and certainly clean up your life if you've got any sin that you've allowed to creep in. Analyze yourself and find yourself somehow worthy to be caught up in the rapture, to be with the Lord. We pray that several times a day here in our home, and I encourage others to do that too, and to you know, analyze yourself and be sure that you're walking straight a path as you can.
Yep. Larry?
Oh, I just continually tell people to keep their seatbelt buckled the way things have been going. We don't know what day we may wake up and it's all changed.
Yeah, it's going to change rapidly. It really is.
I said to Holly the other day, I just came out of the shower and walked into the kitchen. I said, you know, I just had a weird thought. What happened if the rapture occurred while I was in the middle of a shower, you know? Or something else, but you know, it's going to happen.
Well, thanks a lot, Stan. Thanks a lot, Larry, for coming on. We're out of time. And we'll have to try it again later. Okay, thanks a lot. Good night, everyone.
Good night.